Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, just say your name and your, you know, the title of the film.
Sasha DeJulian, Here to Climb.
Yes, it's HBO sports documentary, Here to Climb. It's going, I guess it just played Landmark E Street Cinema earlier this month here in D.C. I guess it was sort of, I guess, like the local premiere. But I'm going to run this here this Tuesday, June 18th, because it's going to make its streaming premiere on HBO Max. So, hey, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. So you grew up in Alexandria, Virginia. So before we even get to the movie itself, let's, you know, paint the story of sort of growing up here in Alexandria. How did you get into rock climbing? Like, you know, it's a world that I'm not really familiar with other than watching Free Solo and stuff like that. But how does someone from Alexandria get into rock climbing?
Absolutely. It's not typically the place that someone starts climbing, though it's becoming more and more popular in the area. I went to my brother's birthday party in the late 90s at a climbing gym called Sport Rock. I was 6 years old, and the gym was just teeming with kids from the birthday party. My brother is a year older than me, so I was there with his hockey team and his schoolmates. And there's something about climbing that I just really loved. And
what was it
I
called?
will admit,
Sport Rock? How do you
yeah,
say
it was called Sport Rock.
Oh, Sport Rock. Okay.
Yep. And
so
Sport
like
Rock,
a little rock climbing wall in like a sports complex kind of a thing.
It's a climbing gym, and
Oh, okay.
It's one of the largest climbing gyms in the country now. It wasn't at the time, because this is pre the amount of expansion that they put into the facility. But yeah, I went and I fell in love with it. I started going about twice a week for their junior team program. And then fast forward a year later, I was seven, and the gym was holding a youth regional championship. And so I walked into the gym and like literally stumbled upon this competitive side of this sport that had just become my hobby.
That's cool. All right. So then where do you go from there? Well, first of all, what high school are you in, Alexandria? What's your quote unquote big break into like pursuing it as like a career?
Yeah, I went to the Potomac School in McLean, Virginia from kindergarten to 12th grade.
Okay.
And at the time, I was one of the very few kids that even knew what rock climbing was. But climbing became such a big part of my life from about 7 or 8 onwards. I started competing at youth regional and divisional and national championships. I won my first continental championship at 11 years old in Mexico City, and came second at U.S. adult national championships in Canada when I was 12. And around then was when I signed my first endorsement deal. And
who was it with? What was the company you were endorsing?
The company that I first signed with was called Mad Rock Climbing, and it's climbing shoes and climbing equipment. And, you know, as a 12-year-old, like, I was just negotiating product that I could have to offset the costs of climbing.
All right, cool. All right. So you get your endorsement deal, you're starting to, you know, place and win some competitions. So let me list your accolades for our folks here to realize how big of a deal you are in the climbing world. So you've won one FEMA overall world champion title. I believe there was like a 10-year span where you were the undefeated Pan American champion. Is that correct?
That's right.
And a three-time U.S. national champion. So you've done it all. So what is that? When I list those accolades, what is that? How do you actually get those? Like, what, name some of like the rock surfaces you've had to climb in order to win some of those titles. Like, I don't even know how that works. Enlighten us how that works to win a national champion. Like, is it like your whole body of work, different climbs you've done throughout the year? How does it work?
I love it. This is a great question. So climbing competition and climbing outside are essentially at this point two different sports, and I do both. I retired from competing when I was about 24, so that was about 7 years ago. Now I just seldom do competitions, but the early success that I had in my climbing career was in competition climbing. And the reason that I made that transition to outdoor climbing, which I do now, is because I felt very satisfied with what I had achieved in indoor climbing. So indoor climbing, there are three different disciplines to it. There's bouldering, speed climbing, and lead climbing. And it is an Olympic sport now. I was a part of the athlete representation that worked with the International Federation of Sport Climbing to rally with the IOC, which is the International Olympic Committee, to have climbing have its inauguration into the Tokyo Olympics. So Paris will be the second time that climbing's been a sport. And when I was competing, you know, you're traveling around the world to these different places where they have artificial walls set up with plastic climbing holds on the wall that dictate specific routes up it. And every time that you're going to a competition, the climb that you're competing on is absolutely unique to that specific venue. And it's set by a team of route setters, which is a whole other aspect of the industry, for essentially, like, if you think of it like an obstacle course, mm-hmm. and you're competing on this obstacle course that no one's ever competed on before. And your result in that competition is given how well you do on the course. And then outdoor climbing, which I started going probably when I was like 9 or so to areas like the New River Gorge in West Virginia, is a totally different venue because you're outside in nature on real elements, and climbing outside has taken me to over 50 different countries around the world. Very immersive experience where you're often camping or living, you know, somewhere where you may never actually end up if it weren't for the cliffs guiding you there. Very off the touristic beaten path.
Nice. All right. So then just to clarify, all those titles I listed, national champion, all that stuff, that is the indoor obstacle courses. Like, I'm picturing like an American Gladiators wall they used to climb up, something like that. And then, but you said around what age you kind of pivoted away from that, and what age did you kind of go to mostly to outdoor climbing?
Yeah, when I was about, well, so I really made a pivot into focusing a lot on outdoor climbing after winning the overall world championship title when I was 18.
Okay.
I went to the Red River Gorge, which is in Kentucky, and it's actually one of the most iconic places to climb in the country. It's a really beautiful area of our country that some may not even know about, but I set this record of climbing the hardest climb achieved by a North American woman in the world, which was a climb called Pure Imagination, which at the time was 514D. And in Europe, there's a different scale that really runs parallel to that grading system, which ours is called the Yosemite Decimal System for grading. But it ranks the caliber of difficulty of movement, of what is required strength and endurance wise to get up a specific blank cliff. And all of the grading system within climbing kind of oscillates off of this framework of quote unquote record setting climbs. So when I go out these days, what I do is big wall free climbing, and that's going around the world to climbs that may or may not have ever been done before and figuring out if I can get up them successfully. And what we call that in climbing is send it, because in order to send something like SEND, it means to get to the top in the most clean fashion, which is in climbing without falling. Okay. And if you fall while you're going up rock face, you lower back down and you try again. So there's actually a lot of falling involved. And I know you mentioned having seen free solo, that's a very different side of climbing than what I do, because free soloing has no rope. What I do in free climbing is climb very large walls, but with a rope for protection in case I fall.
So you have a rope every time you're tackling one of these surfaces.
I do. Gotcha. Yeah. And that's about 99% of climbers too.
I could never do it, let alone without a rope. That sounds terrifying. But okay, cool. So you've traveled over 50 countries doing these outdoor climbs too. And I think here it says you've had more than 30 like first ascents and female first ascents too. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, I've done over a dozen first ascents globally and over 30 first female ascents globally.
Wow. So speak to that really. And then we obviously we have to get to the movie, but I wanted to paint sort of the journey to the movie. How much pride do you take that, you know, you're sort of a pioneer, you know, you're breaking ground, vertical ground for other women to climb. I guess was this traditionally a male sport, and you've pioneered it for women to do it too?
I didn't pioneer it as much as the woman who came before me. I just hope that my career can provide a continued source of inspiration for the women and girls that come after me. But a part of this film is me partnering with one of my childhood heroes who turned into a mentor and friend of mine, Lynn Hill, who was the first woman and also the first human to free climb this iconic feature on El Capitan in Yosemite called The Nose. Mm-hmm. And I grew up with a poster of her on my wall, and I always looked to women like her and Robin Urbisfield and Bobbi Bensman to name a couple of these incredible women who played such significant roles in rock climbing, at least in the US and then as well globally, as these examples of following what you're passionate about and finding out what you're capable of achieving. And so early on in my climbing career, I was just trying to do my best at competitions, showing up and trying to win these titles. And that brought attention to my career, and it enabled me to start making a living off of my sport. And with that attention, I was able to then start doing bigger, more exotic adventures in these locations that brought me to places like Indonesia and Madagascar and, you know, all throughout Europe and the Middle East and Asia to pursue this sport. So I can't say that I have pioneered female rock climbing or rock climbing in general. I think that my career has definitely played a role. And I'd like to think that the unique way in which I approached building my career, while it cut against the grain of what was traditional, hopefully provided a source of inspiration for the next generation to follow as well. You know, I've faced a lot of criticism in my sport for going more commercial. And in a sport like climbing, where there's a lot of gatekeeping, there's a lot of kind of like an old boys club as to how you approach the sport, how you're supposed to be. Here I am showing up with, you know, blonde hair, blue eyes, painted nails pink, and dressing with whatever style I want, which happens to be quite feminine, and embracing both sides of who I am. That has upset people because it's encroaching on, I guess, whatever they think that climbing is meant to look like. I don't look like what the traditional climber, at least in the last 30 years, looked like. And I think that that's good. I think that we need to embrace all of our dualities, but also we need to create more representation and more of a welcoming space within the outdoors so that no one has to feel so much like an outsider, as hopefully not as much as I've felt in my career.
Awesome. That's great. You're opening the door for it. See, anyone should be able to climb or do whatever they want in this life, and gone with all the old stereotypes. I love it.
It's and totally true.
Awesome. Well, let's get to the movie then. So when do they reach out? Does HBO reach out to you, or is it the directors Ricky Stern and Annie Sundberg? Do they like, or do you reach out to them, or how does that actually come about?
When I was diagnosed with double hip dysplasia in 2020, it was right before I went off to do this big expedition that I had planned, and it was this point at which all these dominoes kind of fell, and we were going to be filming me going to climb this really challenging 3,000 foot rock cliff in Mexico. And at that time, that was going to be something that we would capture in a traditional expedition formatted way. And then I was diagnosed with double hip dysplasia, and I was given this potentially career ending answer that I had to do 5 surgeries, which no female or male athlete had come back to the caliber of sport after them. And so I was told by many different doctors and surgeons that I met that my future in climbing, especially as a professional climber, was very uncertain. And at the time as well, It was March of 2020. I got that diagnosis, and I figured, and a lot of this, we step into with the film. So I don't want to give away too many details, but sure. We went on this trip, with my surgery scheduled for 2 weeks after I got back, because it would be essentially my last hurrah. And on that expedition, which I won't give away too many details, but there's a tragedy that happens, and I come back, and there's also, the world is in a very uncertain place, and I go in for the beginning of what's 5 surgeries where they break my pelvic bone into 4 pieces on both sides and cut my abdominal muscles out of my body, are sewing together my, all of my connective tissue that I've shredded through, because essentially my femur head was popping out of its socket on both sides. So it was a lot, and it was 2 10-hour open hip surgeries along with 3 other surgeries. And so my 18 months, this was over the course of 18 months, was a lot of like building back and finding out what I would be able to accomplish. And we were filming already for the preparation of this expedition. And as we went, the story just became more and more evolved into, what does this really transpire to a wider audience? And that's, we all face obstacles. We all face hard times where our future is uncertain. And it's how we grow and we show up to challenges that really define who we are and how we interact with ourselves, but also with others and with what we're capable of achieving. And so the film really came about in a very naturally evolving format where times were changing very quickly, and we were capturing. And even during my surgeries, we had someone in there filming with me, which is very wild. And some of that footage is in the film as well. So it's a very empowering film for me to look at now that it's done. I think that the team did such an amazing job of bringing together all of these different storylines that have existed for me, but also for women in climbing in general, together into this incredible 90 minutes of a platform for women in climbing.
Wow. It sounds inspirational on a whole lot of levels. I didn't even know the medical overcoming all the hip problems. Oh my God. Yeah. This sounds great. I guess I have more than enough to work with, because I'm going to try to, we'll keep it short, because I'm going to try to turn this around for tomorrow. In final seconds, like who are some of the featured participants in this? Obviously they're filming you climbing and probably doing sit down interviews with you as well, but who are some of the other, are there other famous climbers or anyone else that gets interviewed in this thing?
Yeah. A big central character is Lynn Hill, who is interviewed and I am also climbing with, as well as Vianne Charbonneau, who is a climber that I climbed one of the walls with in the film. Pablo Durana, who was a cinematographer on Free Solo, who's also a cinematographer that I worked with on Logical Progression, is a carrying voice within the film, both as someone that I've known for a long time through my youth and upcoming into being an adult, but also is an incredible filmmaker and friend, as well as people like my husband are in the film, and my mom, to really ground the audience in all sorts of angles of, like, here are the top in the sport commentating. You know, Cedar Wright and Alex Honnold have played parts in the film as well. But then here's also, what my mom thinks of it all. And here's what someone that I'm married to thinks of it. So I think that there's a lot of great dimensionality to the voices included in the film.
Awesome. So you're saying Alex Honnold is featured in it as well. The climber from Free Solo and the cinematographer Pablo Durana as well.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Wow. All right. So yeah, folks, if you like that Oscar-winning documentary Free Solo, check out this one. But this is different. This is with you do have a harness. But it's sort of a hometown. Let's end with like a hometown hero shout out. Like pretend I'm not even here. Like you're talking directly to our listeners in the DC, Virginia area. Be like, hey, I grew up around here. Tune in tonight and see your hometown hero.
Yeah. Hey, what's up, everyone? Hometown. Dare I say, I'm not going to say hero. hometown fan of Washington, D.C. area, Alexandria, Virginia. My new film, Here to Climb, is premiering on HBO. It's it'll be streaming on Max at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time tonight.
Oh, and real quick, what are in the actual film? What are, forgive me if you already said, but real quick, closing seconds. What are some of the surfaces, like the locations, geography that you climb in this actual movie? You said it's 90 minutes. So what are some of the ones shown?
Some of the places include my backyard of Boulder, Colorado, as well as Sao Tome, which is a little island country off the coast of Guinea in Africa, as well as El Gigante, which is in Mexico.
Awesome. All right. So you live in Boulder now. How fitting. All right. That's the perfect place to leave it. Hey, thanks for doing this. We'll get everyone to tune in.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I'll talk soon.
All right.